Hi, I'm Amelia, the station manager of Radio Laurier, and you are listening to our coverage of the 2021 student union elections. This interview, originally recorded on January 15th, is with presidential candidate Joey Small. So, can you please tell us your main motivation behind running for the Students Union president?
All right. So, Amelia, I've mentioned a whole lot of facsimiles over the past few days about wanting to be a girl in Bradford and trying to carry on through Donald's legacy and all these experiences I've had 2015. But to cut to the chase, Amelia, it comes down to trying to revitalize the community spirit the best way I know how for the year to come. If you want to boil that down to facsimile, but eureka moment for me was when I was speaking to a former resident student of mine, a student who was a part of the Community Outreach Council for first-year students. And this student, up to that point, had been one of the most bright and optimistic and eager young Golden Hawks that I'd ever met across a very long Laurier career. We were catching up in summer, and all of a sudden she drops the line in conversation: the Laurier community is basically dead this year. And to hear someone like that with so much energy in her first year going into second year effectively drained really, really got me. Sorry, Amelia, is something wrong?
No, I hear you loud and clear.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Please continue.
All right. And I apologize if I rambled a little, but to hear someone who had been such a bright and energetic young first year going in her second year so callous and spent and totally drained of all that good energy just because of bad timing really, really hit me hard. So that's where I took a look back through my time at Laurier and realized how privileged I'd been to enjoy so many of the things I had done, all those experiences, a tremendous O-Week experience, for example, that this year's first years won't have done, again, just because of bad timing. And that thing was a little bit for me. So that's why I'm running for president, is to return us not to a time before COVID, ideally, because it just seems a bit infeasible. My no message is my campaign saying, make Laurier great again. I'm not that kind of guy. What I'm saying is, if we can at least regain our optimism that we had during what I would consider one of the peak years of the Student Union's presidency under Tariq Plummer and his inspirational, charismatic leadership, I'm hoping that can at least inspire and give the first year that we've done so much, and next year, a sense of ever-enduring optimism for what's to come.
And just kind of going on student experience and student optimism, Laurier lost its title for number one in student satisfaction this year. Can you point to any indicators visible to you that may have contributed to this?
I suppose, aside from the obvious being there is no campus to effectively enjoy experiences upon, we could also cite the breakdown in communication from Custom Association this year. Now, President Kelly, in fairness, has done a fantastic deal trying to revive the old perch system. But some of our older students will remember was a way for clubs and associations across Waterloo and Brentford to promote themselves, pitch registration to potential new hires, new volunteers, especially bringing first years and helping them find their niche, helping expedite the reimbursement and registration process, and generally making it much, much easier. We've prided ourselves for years at Laurier on having a niche that pretty much everyone can fit, something for everyone. And this year, or at least since the Student Choice Initiative effectively bankrupted the purge, clubs and associations, faculty associations, Greek Life, athletics, have been left to fend for themselves throughout disparate and straggling social media platforms. You know, some information's on Facebook, some of it's on Instagram, some of it's on Snapchat, some of them have their own websites and even a TikTok. And it's the strange thing to me, Amelia, to know that we have all these different social media platforms mm-hmm. and a presence on them, and yet students' complaint is that they can't find this information. I just can't reconcile that in my mind.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think we're missing a core aspect of student satisfaction this year, missing a central one-stop shop for student information.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big things I would like to see come back in my administration.
Mm-hmm. So essentially just more organization for students to access the information that matters to their experience.
That's a strategic way to boil it down, Amelia. And I do want to be clear, organization and communication are fantastic strategic buzzwords. We hear them time in, time out throughout a lot of presidential candidacies. But one of the things that I feel set my approach aside this year, this candidacy, is that I can distinctly assign actionable items to those goals. Organization is great for any student, but I'm saying we are going to get a central website back on the ground for students to access and for clubs and associations to make themselves known. That is the kind of change I want to see. Real change.
Yeah, actionable change.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, just I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your platform. And when you go on the website and you can see the two candidates, yourself and Pega, your platform is quite short and definitely does not give as much detail next to your fellow opponents. Can you explain the reasoning behind writing a shorter platform? Is there more to come? What can students kind of expect from that?
Sure. So I'm going to break that down into a bit of a two-part response, Amelia. So the brief platform that students will have seen on the website captures the summary, which both Peg and I were expected to submit, which consisted of no more than 150 words. So what I'd like students to see when they, to think of when they see that, is a teaser of things to come. You're absolutely right in thinking that there is more to come. And so Peg actually said it quite well herself during the open forum that this candidacy is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And after about 5 years of watching presidential candidates come and go, Amelia, one concerning thing I've noticed is that there is a lot of energy from both candidates and audiences coming out the gate. You know, all candidates are keen to put themselves online straight away, garner people's interest, and students respond in kind. As soon as things get going and things are put online, there's tons and tons of interest. But then as the weeks go on and things start to settle and classes intensify, interest wanes. Fewer and fewer people tune into open forums and debates. And by the time actual voting comes around, we wind up seeing our average turnout, which we've witnessed on average, has been about 22% for the past 4 years. It's incredibly disappointing. What that says to me, Amelia, is that 4 out of 5 students who can affect meaningful change don't, because by the time voting comes around, there's just nothing around to keep them going. And so the reason why there's not a whole lot of information accessible right now is partly because of the strategy to sustain interest. People will start to see a lot in a very short time span. What I'm encouraging people to do for the time being is to stay tuned. It's cryptic, and I've revealed some details throughout the open forum debate, but therein lies the rub. By revealing just enough of my hand, I'm keen to get students asking questions about what more is to come. Already, Amelia, I can tell you there's been quite a bit of positive response. My Facebook inbox, for example, has been full of people saying, Joey, these are some really solid ideas you're coming up with a debate, man. Where can I read more? Like, do you have an Insta page? Do you have a Facebook? And I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if other presidential candidates have had this much engagement in previous years, but if I want to sustain this and get people to stay on the line and keep asking questions over the next week, I feel we need to sustain that interest longer, keep people just pulling out long enough to lay the details on them when it's just right.
Absolutely. And, you know, I understand the rationale, but for students maybe who don't have the privy to kind of understand the ins and outs of the students' union, who don't understand about, you know, what you just explained, how waning interest when, you know, they come right out of the gate with social media platforms and websites and everything, and there's a general decline after that. Are you not concerned that they may see your platform and Pega's platform and think the effort is less with yours? Are you at all concerned about that?
Initially, it was an initial concern that the team expressed to me, and that certainly we knew that Pega was going to come out strong right out the gate and reveal a lot more information. But I held out enduring hope that students would have the patience and the endurance to hold out just long enough such that when social media started a buzzing over the coming week and students would start to see the online presence come out and come full force, start to see things in their inbox, that may re-spark an interest that may have waned over the weekend, as it were, and the time it's been since the open forum. And that'll give us a good, strong element to come back and come into full force over the coming week. I might compare it to another popular Joe in politics, south of the border. Folks who engaged in the last year's American election might remember when he was buying the nomination. Joe Biden lost the first few primaries in the states to, I think it was Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders, and then suddenly exploded in popularity very soon after. I think it's a bit shallow for me to say I'm exactly like that other Joe. I think that the main thing is just a skinny comparison. But it's a nice colloquialism to describe my enduring hope, in that like gaining interest over a longer period of time and conserving energy over the marathon, students will engage as soon as they see the Joey for President posters hit their inboxes. And ideally, we'll see whether or not the union and student publications are willing to push that sustained interest by revealing my full platform as soon as I make that public as well.
Well, also, sorry, go ahead. Were you saying something?
No, just to cap it off, it's definitely in our mutual interest. If we all want to stay in interest, the student publications, the union, and myself, if as soon as I release that full platform, the union makes it fully available on their website.
For sure. Are you, well, because I think the court has begun to, you know, like publish platforms and start writing stories on them. Are you, I totally understand your approach, your kind of cryptic, suspenseful approach, but are you concerned that maybe your full platform won't be released on deadline if it doesn't meet kind of what the Accord's election plan is? Because they, of course, and Radio Laurier have a pretty extensive way they cover elections. So are you concerned that maybe because you haven't gotten it out, like let's say at the same time as Pega or other BOD applicants, that you might miss out at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
Main reason being, first of all, the platform itself has been effectively complete. It's in a state of release at the moment. As soon as it comes out, students will see exactly how comprehensive the plans are, and not only that we have a strategic vision we would like to accomplish, but actionable to each of those. It's that extensive nature that will make a much more compelling case. And I think as far as both union and student publication protocols go, I think it's fair to say that presidential campaigns in the past have drawn considerably more attention than those of other jobs. And so it's certainly in both the mutual interest of the union and student publications, in the interest of not only full transparency, but sheer demand to see what's available, to make my full platform available as soon as it drops. In all of our interest, and I'd encourage some flexibility. While it's an orthodox approach, that transparency will be what students are claiming for student publications.
Well, our job, of course, is we obviously just publish what we see and what we hear. So that's our job. And that's in the student's best interest, too. Anyway, moving along from platforms before our listeners get sick of us. You seem to harp on the work or focus a lot on the work done by former SU president Tariq Plummer. What about his presidency was so exemplary to you? I know you've talked a lot about your very close relationship with him and his communication and transparency, but is there anything else that you haven't mentioned that you find so exemplary compared to the past few presidents the Students Union has seen?
Certainly. I think if you wanted a quick soundbite that would help you understand what attracted me so much to Tariq's style of leadership, it was that the proof was in the pudding.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very short way to put it, but Tariq outlined clear strategic goals and actionable items associated to each of them, and very clearly explained the step-by-step process that he wanted to set out upon as president to accomplish those. I've mentioned it before, but I can remember a time when the new website used to post monthly presidential updates.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom of those updates that Tariq would provide, he would accompany it with a graphic of a checklist with all of his campaign promises that he had made the January he ran,
mm-hmm.
and check marks alongside each and every promise that he had accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
A simple and clear way to demonstrate what he had done to help students.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of leadership that mm-hmm. I see as exemplary above all else. You want to look at particular actionable items. The monthly checklist is one thing,
mm-hmm.
but his work, particularly to integrate the wellness center and expand upon the availability of mental wellness services for students, is an idea that I've looked to expand upon through conversations with now former VP of Student Affairs, Dave McMurray. I mentioned this very briefly in the full understanding of this plan will be made available on the People platform once that's dropped. You'll be able to see that. But my understanding of David Murray's vision, the Integrated Wellness Centers, as well as Tariq's, is effectively that I'm going to revitalize the groundwork for increased capacity, physical capacity, that is, more space to host mental wellness services that students have demonstrated that they need more and more in droves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification. Moving along, just something I remembered in the open forum from the other day. You've been emphasizing organization for just clubs and associations throughout your campaign. And I know you were talking about the Perch app, and you mentioned that you wanted to expand on the Perch app. What exactly do you mean when you say you want to kind of expand the outreach of it?
Right. Expands a bit of a broad term, admittedly, but my idea for an expanded Perch revival would take the work that the union is currently doing mm-hmm. on its effective replacement prep at the moment and make sure that every student has made explicit is made explicitly clear as early as my administration
mm-hmm.
exactly what that does intend to provide. Broad outreach from day one will make sure that young students understand that there is a central place for them to go to find their niche, find the club or association that fits them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-way street. Not only will younger students be able to find those services, but by expanding the awareness of this new platform to the clubs and associations themselves, Greek Life Athletics, faculty associations, by getting them on board and explaining that the process will expedite reimbursements and new club registration, we will do everything within our power to ensure that clubs and associations understand this is the ideal solution. This is the best way to recapture what worked about the Perch
mm-hmm.
and expand on the speediness of all the documentation that accompanied all that work, cutting the red tape, which so many faculty association executives that expressed me was one of their big concerns. The go-between between the VP of clubs and associations on both campuses and their associations really hampered their effectiveness. It's even worse for executives who were brought on in the middle of a year after the initial training and delegation process, who suddenly had to get caught up with months' worth of information. That concerns me too, understanding that people may come and go throughout the year. And so I want to to make sure that there's a good way for clubs and associations to bring on new executives and help them get as comfortable as they can in the shortest amount of time with the bureaucratic process.
Great. Thank you. And just jumping right back to your platform that's on the SU website here, you say that an experienced Joe at the helm may help a damaged community to settle the mood and seal the wounds. Now, aside from COVID-19 and obviously remote learning and a lack of campus life, what damages are you referring to in relation to Laurier in this context?
Amelia, I admit I was waxing a little poetic. I talked about it, Joe. The obvious reference is obvious. The damages are pretty clear. Like, had it not been for COVID-19, I would not be hearing from students like the one I spoke to, residents, faculty association leaders of so many associations across both campuses that the Laurier campus was dead this year. If we had a campus to enjoy these experiences on, we would have nowhere near the kind of damages to our pride and our spirit as Golden Horn as we have. And so that is what I want to try and work around. Now, I understand that no candidate in their right mind could say, I'm going to end COVID, or I'm going to get other associations back on campus by fall 2021. It's unrealistic. But while I'm a realist, I am still enduringly optimistic. And so my plan outlines a return to campus services as a contingency. It's enduring hope that drives a lot of my promise. It's driven by actionable items and realism. So I've said time and again that if campus and O-Week and all the other services we've come to enjoy as Golden Hawk and define our experience aren't back by fall 2021, it will be my mandate to ensure that by fall 2022, we have a very, very clear and extensive plan to bring those services back. That starts, believe it or not, with that O-Week service. And I've not actually dabbled into this much, but as one of the most formative experiences any first year can go through, it hurts me to know that there is an entire cohort of first years, both this year and potentially next, who will miss out on one of the most formative experiences any Laurier student can have. And that's why part of my plan for a revitalized O-Week, either for fall 2021 or 22, which my eventual successor would inherit, would be to open it up to create a staggered service that would open ticket sales to second-year cohorts at that time. Any students who had missed out on an on-campus O-Week experience would be extended the opportunity to take part in an amended O-Week schedule so they could understand what it is they had missed just because of bad timing. An ambitious promise, and it's a big one, I recognize. And the full platform will explain the step-by-step process to ensure that it is both feasible and realistic within the time frame I have planned. So for the time being, I want this year's young students to understand, under my administration, you will not miss out on one of the best experiences I can say, personal experience, you can have at Laurier.
For sure. That was actually my next question for you about, again, on your platform, the revolutionizing of the O-Week program for post-lockdown. But you answered my question, so thank you.
I can add on to it a little bit. I recognize revolutionizing.
Absolutely.
Just a quick tap off on that. Revolutionizing is a pretty broad term, and it sounds pretty vague when put in that strategic description. But if you want an actionable item, it's revolutionizing it because no O-Week service has been that extensive, has offered ticket sales to second years and up to entire cohorts, and or has created entire staggered schedules that would allow second years to take part in a reasonably similar experience. Obviously, some parts would have to be extended, campus tours, and certain elements that are only really relevant for first years, we may end up cutting out. But we'd ensure that the final product and schedule are tailored for those returning students who would have missed out on one of the best experiences Laurier had to offer.
No, thank you for that answer. Now, again, going back to the whole closed campus situation, if you are elected, there still is a chance that you might inherit a closed campus for the next school year, so starting in fall 2021. What steps will you take to improve upon the student experience after experiencing the transition to remote learning this year?
It's a fair question, Amelia, and I recognize that with all this talk of hope and optimism, I recognize some students might hear me talk about a reopening by fall 2021 mm-hmm. and immediately think it can't be done. And if mm-hmm. it can't be done, then I can't do anything for the next year. That is absolutely not true. My campaign is driven by an enduring sense of hope and optimism, but as president, my utmost priority is still to uphold the constitutional end of the organization. And that is, as stated in the policy manual, to provide those students with a holistic university experience and an enhanced student life. It's broken down into a few different ends, including services that cater to their financial needs, a safe and sustainable environment to enjoy those experiences in, and a high-quality academic experience. Mm-hmm. And so, I recognize that a lot of those ends can still be achieved via a remote learning environment. Even if campus hasn't reopened by fall 2021, there's still a lot we can do to expand on available services at Laurier through remote learning, that mm-hmm. is. And for that, I would touch on sustainability initiatives in particular. I know that Peg has made the cornerstone of our campaign and have to honestly applaud her for her commitment to that strategic goal. But I want to expand on a lot of the actionable items that Laurier has taken to implement sustainability as a core part of its five-year strategic plan, mm-hmm. which was passed only a couple of years ago and will still be a driving part of my administration. We've already done a lot as far as sustainability goes in terms of actionable items. Some students who remember on-campus life will remember the separated bins that were available as a test pilot by EcoHawks in the dining hall, not the dining hall, pardon, the terrace food court.
Yeah.
We had the banning of single-use plastics and implementation of reusable plastic containers that could be rented from Wilts at the dining hall and the food court. Fantastic idea and a good way to get a quick discount on some meals.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the solar panel that was installed on certain academic buildings. All fantastic and actionable items. And I would like to work with the university to better understand how I can continue those actionable items. They're great starts, but there's so much more that we can accomplish. Sustainability mm-hmm. doesn't just have to be a strategic byword or a buzzword, if you like. It can be real change that Laurier students can see. And with the absence of students on campus, we may wind up seeing a lot more renovation capacity. Already seeing the deck outside the concourse mm-hmm. torn up and undergoing renovation on account of the fact that there's no student traffic. Following that same line of logic, I see no reason to expect that this university wouldn't incorporate other green renovation initiatives, given that there's no student traffic to contend with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just going back to the initial question, I'm sure you've watched as the current administration has dealt with a locked campus and a lack of campus life. And if you could kind of pick a few things that you maybe would have done differently or done better to enhance the student experience that you would want to implement if the campus is closed in fall 2021, what do you know? Do you have any ideas of what you might do? So kind of a two-pronged question. What do you think could have been done better and what would you do if you inherit the campus again? If you inherit the campus and it's closed, sorry.
The simplest answer to what could have been done better this year, as I've mentioned time and again, is communication from the youth. Now, I understand that Devin Kelly and her team were under a great deal of uncertainty as far as the situation goes, and that a certain amount of turnover between a solid contingency plan and actionable change is understandable. That said, It's difficult for me to understand why the union didn't have an actual contingency plan for a campus-wide shutdown at all. Like, no one could have predicted COVID, per se. But after doing a little bit of research, following some complaints from this past year's icebreakers about how O-Week was operated and how training was conducted, I did a little bit of research on policy and came across an executive limitation on the president that prevents that president or implements sanctions upon them if they allow the union to operate without a clear contingency plan for its volunteers. Hmm. And that, I think, was missing as far as accountability goes from the candidacy. It could have been it could have been so much clearer what Devin Kelly and her team were accomplishing through that series of monthly updates or the checklist idea that I've reiterated time and again. But it's simple, actionable items like that, Amelia, that make that difference. Like all the fancy bandstanding and strategic discussion sounds great, but students want the meat and potatoes of what has been done. And that's the kind of thing you need update checklists or updates to accomplish. Clear communication, elevated pitches, boiling down what has been done. Now, I just want to step back a moment, and I hope that answers the first part of your question.
Yes, thank you.
The second part covered what might I have done differently?
Yes, precisely that. If there's anything, like, it was truly just a follow-up question I was thinking of. If you don't have an answer, that's fine, but go ahead if you do.
Sorry, I feel as though I'm just misunderstanding things a little bit. You're talking about actual, actionable items that I might have implemented were I elected last year.
Just essentially what you would have done if you had inherited the lockdown campus based on what you have seen this year from the current administration.
I understand. Right. So I've talked, so I think both Devin and my strategic interests would have aligned. Our strategic direction would have been very, very similar. I recognize that Devin and her team worked diligently to set up a strategic plan to help both the union and its volunteers have a clear direction for where they would go. I just feel as though the actionable items, their operations, could have been made much more transparent as they went along. And I understand in a board meeting where that issue was expressed by a member of the board, the president's response issued something to the effect of they didn't want students to get bogged down in all the commotion, the conversation, and all these intimate details. Now, I understand not wanting to have students bogged down with tons and tons of information. It's like no student is going to troll through 200 pages of a random budget meeting that the board of directors hosted to find their information. I understand that perfectly. But if that core information could at least have been condensed into some elevator pitches, clear updates that I proposed and that Tariq Plummer during his presidency was all too keen to make evident to students on a monthly basis with a clear graphic to make it even simpler. That's the kind of actionable change that would have set Devin Kelly's leadership apart and made it absolutely exemplary. As it stands, I think she had an excellent strategic direction and challenging operational implementation that, again, I understand and respect that some elements would have been out of her control. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, with the concerns I heard from a lot of student union volunteers, icebreakers, numbers of 80, eco-hawks, bridging the gap, foot patrol, a lot of them felt as though email communication in particular broke down over the summer and that there really was no clear direction in a timely manner to help those students understand whether O-Week was even going ahead in some understandable and clear form, and if so, what that might have been.
Fair enough.
That's the kind of change that I'd have liked to see.
Absolutely.
Some regular communication.
Absolutely. I mean, that's totally fair. Going on to student engagement again, a significant complaint this year was that students felt SU was not transparent about changes to healthcare coverage. And of course, the whole big example that's been going around is the oral contraceptives not being covered any longer. How would you kind of bring back transparency for communicating policy like this to students?
In a nutshell, I wouldn't have buried the healthcare cuts under massive director's report. I would have made sure that it was in one of those monthly updates on the student union website. And had it not been a problem I could have dealt with, the kind of thing that could have gone on a monthly checklist, say, I would have made sure that students understood that that kind of cut would have been an inevitable setback of the lower revenue the organization has to deal with this year. Now, I'm an accountant by trade, Amelia. I understand if under hard times, cutbacks are necessary. My concern was and always has been when students have the rug swept under them, so to speak, especially when that money is on the line, that's not all right in my book. Mm-hmm. I would have made sure that that student who issued that tweet would have understood that oral contraceptives would not have been covered by the union before she got to the pharmacy and got her receipt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think that speaks to a larger kind of broader issue that's I've heard being discussed a lot in the open forums is just a general misunderstanding of the students' union and what they do. Just a theme I've noticed over the past few weeks since the beginning of campaigning. Is there anything, and again, what do you think kind of contributes to this misunderstanding? Do you think it's a lack of communication, a lack of transparency, or just maybe students, I don't want to say students aren't interested in understanding, or what do you think this might be?
This is a really good question, Amelia, and it's tough to condense into a short set of issues. It's something I've noticed since I joined the board of directors back in my third year, and it plagued the union ever since. And answering this question is difficult, largely because of certain campaign procedures. I'm limited in exactly how I can speak out against certain union practices, and the president, I certainly can't slam them behind. Nor do I mean to. I'm entirely respectful of certain practices, but I understand that the bureaucratic process just is not going to engage every single student who falls under the undergraduate umbrella. We elect student representatives to serve on the board, I think largely so that some students don't have to troll through massive budget meetings and understand all the ins and outs of their healthcare policy. We trust that an elected board of 12 representatives and their president will make that policy much clearer to them. Mm-hmm. And certainly the board has a lot of policies in place to help with that transparency. There's an entire committee set up for it called Ownership Linkage, ownership being the undergrad population of the student body, ownership linkage meaning the board's attempt to market itself, put itself out there, and make sure students understand from the horse's mouth, as it were, exactly what policies are being discussed behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. I think it's that behind closed doors phrase that I think looms a lot larger in students' minds as far as bureaucracy goes than at face value, in that given that a lot of these meetings are held, have been traditionally held, rather, in the student union boardroom, often with a closed door, or even with it askew, with some serious conversation going on, it can be daunting for any, what I would call, normal student, not a member of the board, to pass by that room and think to themselves, that looks like a meeting I could go and sit in on, listen to. Mm-hmm. It's intimidating knowing the dialogue that is going on there and the insular nature and what I would say culture of the union and the board, whether intentional or unintentional, tends to exclude people who just can't follow along or just haven't been given the tools to do so in a clear way.
I think that's the biggest part of it too, the latter of what you just said, just been given the tools to understand. Because I mean, I'm sure if I didn't work in student publications and this was part of my job to understand the students' union a little bit, I surely wouldn't, right? So it's,
you're absolutely right, Amelia.
Yeah, it's just how is it made more approachable, I think, is a concern that I feel like I've heard. I'm finished my undergrad at Laurier now, but every election year, that was something that was mentioned, was making it more digestible for all students. Anyway, just an interesting point to discuss. Again, that was just a follow-up question. Last two questions. We're in the home stretch here, Joey. So there's been a general decline in volunteer retention and recruitment with the SU. And I know in our first Instagram Live interview, you talked about wanting to work with first-year students and engaging them. But just with students as a whole, what will you do to try and engage volunteers if you are elected?
One of the major strategic elements of my administration, Amelia, is going to be to challenge that behind closed doors perception that a lot of younger students do have about the election. Mm-hmm. Now, this mentality, I've mentioned what can be seen as the insular culture of the board and what students have spoken of as quote unquote the bubble of the union in the context of my idea for the Revitalized Diversity and Equity Initiative, something that Tariq Plummer laid the groundwork for and that I would like to see massively expanded on. Part of that challenge, part of that initiative was designed to challenge pervasive culture among student union volunteers. Again, probably unintentional, but that did exclude certain volunteers who were international from marginalized communities and really hampered their ability to enjoy their experience. But for younger students in particular, I'm aiming to make sure that my administration is speaking right to them, is working on the ground as far as marketing goes to get young students engaged in the political process, pardon me, as soon as possible. Something I've never seen a political candidate or a sitting president do over the course of their administration or a candidacy in a series of lecture circuits. And it boggled my mind why, given that your average B111 or PS101 lecture, your average KIN lecture, first year psychology, economics, political science, all these massive lectures have anywhere between 200 to 300 students a piece, a massive audience of potential union volunteers and teens who could be talked into getting involved with the organization if they heard it from the folks themselves and just left to find that information themselves. What I'm proposing, and it hails back to my reverence for action, is to engage on a series of lecture circuits on my presidency. Get right in those lectures with professors' permission, of course, working within their parameters, which I've come to understand a lot of professors are willing to provide.
Yeah, of course. I think all professors want their students to engage, right?
Absolutely, Amelia. It's about getting to those students face-to-face. Like, submitting a PowerPoint for consideration, if a professor will let you speak directly to the student, just isn't going to cut it. It's so cold, Amelia, that that's where I think students might want to see some warmth and an open embrace from their president. To see President Joey's face and hear him say, I want all you first years to become great icebreakers next year. I'd like to see some of you be on Eco Hawks, Bridging the Gap, Foot Patrol. I'd like to see you apply for residency then, or athletics. Get involved with some faculty associations. Check out some of the great experiential learning opportunities Laurier has under its umbrella, the entire umbrella, and know that I will be there as an open voice to welcome you into the fold.
That's a great plan. And I think that's really, like, again, what you talk about, transparency, I think that's huge. For students and just for retention with volunteers. I think that's really important. And last question for you here, Joey. Voter turnout was extremely low last year, 6%. What are you going to be doing during the campaign process to engage students and make them feel like if they vote, they can make a difference?
Knowing last year's pretty dismal turnout, I think it falls on me and Pega to make sure that we are doing everything we can over the next week and a bit to make sure that this campaign, the most engaging it can be. Mm-hmm. Pega, I would say, has been a fantastic opening act for this campaign. But I imagine, like any great concert, it's when the main is on that things really kick into gear. And tracing back, I guess we're coming full circle in this conversation to how I see this race as a marathon rather than a sprint. When students see continued innovation, the fact that we've had a fantastic first week of interest in innovation, mm-hmm. and that next week's campaign will bring much more clarity as to what the other guy is bringing to the table, mm-hmm. and it's me. Student interest will be re-engaged drastically when they start seeing those next posters go all over Instagram and Facebook or their social media profile. When they see the full platform, that will respawn the interest. Had I released it this year, it may very well have gotten lost in the shuffle, and that drove my strategy mm-hmm. this year. Knowing that next week will be an intense period of debate amongst Peg and myself, and that both of us will have made our full positions on the issues very, very clear. Mm-hmm. Not only that I have a strategic vision and actionable items to associate with them, that will be where the true test of endurance lies, Amelia, and that is what students will gravitate to, I'm sure.
Excellent. Well, Joey, I wish you the best of luck. Thank you for your time today. This was a very long conversation, but I think these longer interviews are an excellent chance for students who aren't able to go to the open forums and debates to kind of get a chance to get to know the candidates and their platform. So I really appreciate your time and patience. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'd be happy to do it again anytime.
Thanks, Joey. Take care.
Bye.